right, we are here at the 3 o'clock argument. Let me introduce your panel. To my right is Justice Dana Womack. To my left is Justice Michael Wallach. My name is Wade Birdwell. We're your panel for the day. And we will be here to hear the case at 3. And if there's no further ado, is ado the correct word? I don't think it's the correct word, but anyway, the clerk will call the case, please.
May it please the court. The permit in this case conferred no vested property interest sufficient to support a takings or due course of law claim. As you understand, Ms. Granger contends that the permit conferred a leasehold interest on her and contends that that is a vested property interest. It's not. It's what we call a license. The permit gave Ms. Granger a license to go on the premises to hold a festival. It did not confer upon her any vested real estate interest. As early as 1925, the Texas Supreme Court said in Settegast versus Foley, a license is a privilege or authority given to one or retained by one to do some act or acts on the land of another. That is precisely what this permit allowed them to do. Conversely, a lease, the essential quality of a lease is that the owner of the property intends to dispossess himself of the property and give exclusive possession of it to another. Okay, that's what the Texas Supreme Court said in Brown versus Johnson in 1929. That continues to be the rule of law in Texas. Okay, so an intent to dispossess and a right to give exclusive possession to another is the core of a lease. Now, the language of the permit itself, which you have in front of you, makes clear the district did not intend to dispossess itself of the property and give Ms. Granger the exclusive right to occupy it. In Article 1 of the lease, it says twice, this is a non-exclusive right to use the shack and its surrounding grounds for the purposes of holding this festival. Article 4A, Granger was given, quote, the privilege of conducting a festival along the designated areas of the Trinity River in September of 2022. Article 4D gave the district the right to enter the property at any time associated with its operations as a water district. The bottom line, there is nothing about this permit document that provides any indicia of a lease under Texas law. Ms. Granger relies on a single case in her brief, J. Bryce Holdings versus Wilcrest Townhomes. But J. Bryce does not disturb the basic rule that the owner must dispossess himself of the property, intend to dispossess himself of the property, and give exclusive right of use to it to another. In that case, there was a dispute over a condo owner's ability to enter short-term Airbnb-type residential leases with third parties. Those contracts gave those renters the exclusive right to residential possession of the property for short periods. That was sufficient for them to be leases into J. Bryce. There's nothing about that finding, though, in J. Bryce. It's inconsistent with what the Texas Supreme Court has held since the 20s, which is there still has to be an intent by the owner to basically give up and dispossess himself of the property and give exclusive right of use to another. Now, even if this document could be characterized as a lease, Ms. Granger's takings claim fails because she seeks recovery of personal damages. She does not seek recovery of the fair market value of the lease, which, as you know, under takings law, that's the only damage you can get, the fair market value of the real estate that was taken. Ms. Granger made clear in her pleadings, she made clear in discovery, that what she sought to recover in this case were her alleged personal damages arising from the permit's termination. The expenses incurred in reliance on the permit, the value of lost business relationships with her vendors, and the lost revenue that would have purportedly been earned through the event. None of that's recoverable in a takings claim. The only recoverable damages would be the fair market value of the alleged lease. But she doesn't seek to recover that. Why not? Because there's likely zero fair market value for this so-called lease because it was non-transferable and it was non-exclusive. In other words, you couldn't sell it on the market. Now, finally, setting aside her takings claim, Ms. Granger effectively concedes that the due course of law claim is moot, even if there were a vested property interest. As you know, the due course of law claim does not allow for the recovery of damages. The Constitution does not allow for recovery of damages in Texas, with the exception of the takings clause. The only type of relief available under the due course of law clause is injunctive relief. The trial court denied the injunctive relief, and the time for holding the festival under the permit has long passed. As Ms. Granger acknowledges in her brief, injunctive relief is no longer relevant. Accordingly, even if there were a vested property interest, the due course of law claim fails because it is moot. Ms. Granger does not argue otherwise. I think the law is clear that this is not a lease. There is no vested property interest, and there is no basis for a takings or due course of law claim here from a law standpoint. I'd also point out from a policy standpoint, if this court holds that a permit, a facility use permit, is a lease that creates a vested property interest that gives rise to a taking claim, every time a governmental entity in this state terminates a permit, you're going to have to confront a taking claim, a takings claim. And you're going to have to give due process. You're going to have to give notice and a right to be heard before the permit is terminated. Okay? That completely changes the way governmental entities operate. And there are not going to be very many permits issued if that's, in fact, the ruling and how this case comes out. So I'd point out from a policy standpoint, it would be disastrous for the court to determine that this document, this permit, is a compensable property interest under the takings clause or under the due course of law clause. I have searched. I have not found a case anywhere in any of the 50 states, in federal court, where a court has said that a permit is a compensable property interest. To the contrary, they say the opposite. Nothing further. I'll turn it over to opposing counsel, unless you have any questions.
Thank you.
Can't forget these. I've reached that age and stage and phase in life. May it please the court. Let me start out by immediately responding to opposing counsel's comments on policy issue, right? This is not a big policy opinion that this court's being asked to write, or a case that the court's being asked to decide. The Water District has had for many, many years quite able legal counsel. They had quite able legal counsel that drafted the permit that the court has. It's Exhibit B to both appellate's brief and appellee's brief. If they wanted it to be a license revocable at will, that is not difficult to state in the document. But that's not what it says. And it's clear why it says that, right? Because you don't give somebody a permit that's a license that's revocable at will, charge them $5,000 for that, only to be able to take it away for no reason at all.
Well, right? doesn't Article 7, Paragraph B essentially do that when it says that the district reserves the right upon 10 days prior written notice to event producer to terminate this permit for any reason deemed necessary by reason of its function as a water control and improvement district, but not for mere convenience or to grant a permit to another party?
No, sir, Your Honor, that does not do that. Because for any reason that's relevant to their functioning as a water control and improvement district has to do with where this property is located. As the court probably knows, as the crow flies, this thing is about a half a mile west of here. It's real close. It's right on the Clear Fork of the Trinity River. And it's subject to the United States Army Corps of Engineers jurisdiction also. That has to do with the ability, as it were, under water control to take over and deal with the property if necessary. And not only is that clause relevant there, Justice, it is also becomes important in the context of 4D, the right of entry and inspection. And let me just transition into that in responding to opposing counsel's comments and argument about exclusivity. We don't disagree that there are lots of cases out there, Supreme Court authority, that talk about what it takes to be a lease. And leases look like lots of different animals in terms of residential leases, commercial leases, short-term rental leases, which is the Jay Bryce case. And we felt that was important to a call to the court's attention because it's a recent Supreme Court case that does apply to our facts in terms of a short-term rental if in fact, that short-term rental involves the, as it were, the landlord, if you will, the Water Control and Improvement District, the Water District now.
Well, you cited in your brief the quote from the Black's Law Dictionary, which the Supreme Court used, where it talks about a lease is a contract by which a rightful possessor of real property conveys the right to use and occupy the property in exchange for consideration. What you didn't quote was two sentences later, which says that Jay Bryce contracts with tenants to allow them the right to exclusively occupy the townhomes. Do you not think that's an important consideration, the exclusive right to use?
Exclusive right, Your Honor, is an important part of it, but keeping in mind there it's the exclusion of the landlord having the right to use it at the same time. That's what the exclusion goes to. And when you look at what they call a permit, and I think it's a short-term lease, and I think that when you read it in toto, the name is not outcome determinative, right? You got to read it in toto. When you read it in toto, what they did is they gave Ms. Granger, Prost Productions, they gave them the exclusive right to use it for the purposes of putting on the event. And that language under right of entry and inspection is completely consistent with that. In any other lease setting, whether it's a single family residence, it's an apartment, whether it's a commercial office building lease, landlords always have some right to enter the leased premises. They just do. 4D is completely consistent with that because it says they retain the right to enter at all times for any purpose reasonably necessary. And then what three things that fall right in there, right? Ensure the event producer's compliance with the district's general ordinance, covenants and provisions of the permit, rules and regs governing the Panther Island provision. In other words, make sure you're running this event in a way that's consistent with what our laws, our rules, our regs would require. And then the other one, which again is obvious here because this is U.S. Army Corps of Engineers flood area, and that is if we've got to deal with it from a standpoint of water control, flood control. Other than that, when you look back at, as Justice pointed out, under 7B, they cannot terminate it for mere convenience or to grant a permit to another party, which is absolutely consistent with the exclusivity provision. And what I would tell the court that the non-exclusive language that is in there is not to allow the general public to come onto the property, the leased premises being a defined term under what I call a short-term lease, they call it a permit. It's not to deal with that part. It is, in fact, to deal with the non-exclusivity is to deal with the fact that the Water District has its own obligations vis-a-vis the Corps of Engineers, that at any time, if it's necessary, the Corps, the Water District's got to be able to come in and use that property for water control, flood control. That is the point of it, because otherwise
the district has used this property to do this very event in the past, which has nothing to do with flood control or anything having to do with you know, flood water control or anything like that.
Sure.
It's entertainment.
Absolutely, Your
Honor.
And
this whole process, this whole area set up for purposes in large part of providing an entertainment venue, right?
And to that end, the Water District has not only used it for it to put on its version of Oktoberfest, my client's version was going to be a completely different version, but they have this document because they drafted it and they have leased that premises out to many, many different parties and entities for purposes of putting on events to raise funds. And it makes, to me, no sense at all why anybody that's getting ready to put on a large event at that location would enter into a permit that's a mere license, revocable at will by the water district, and spend tens of thousands of dollars advertising it and getting ready to put that event on, only to be able to have the water district, because they decide, for whatever reason, it's a water district function, we're going to pull it. And what I would submit to this panel is that, in fact, the reason that the water district pulled the permit is because James Hill, referenced in the briefing, right, and Dan Booman, the general manager of the water district, testified to this in his deposition. James Hill's position was he didn't want the Grangers to be able to run this event. He didn't like the Grangers. He didn't want the water district to do business with the Grangers. That's why this got pulled. It didn't get pulled because of a water district function. It got pulled on personal feelings and a dislike of the Grangers. That's what happened. To that end, let me also point out to the court, I'd ask that the court be provided so that you had it in front of you, because I think it helps to see what you're looking at. You've got Exhibit A and Exhibit B from what is the last two pages of the permit. The point here being, when you look at the permit document itself, right, and that's part of both parties' brief, it's Exhibit B to each party's brief in this case, Exhibit A outlines the area in red that the event producer, which is the term used in the permit, gets to use for purposes of putting on the event. If you see right below the red line there is a, looks like a white line, that's actually a sidewalk. And what happens when events are put on at this venue is the person who has signed this permit and is going to put on the event is given a set of keys. And the shack itself is about 9,000 square feet. It's got a fence around it, but that fence can be removed and a bigger perimeter fence put in place. And the way these events are run, and the permit even alludes to this, the general public doesn't just get to come in, despite what opposing counsel says in their brief. This is not a public festival. It's a ticket event. And that certainly has been what the Water District did when they put on Oktoberfest. When other people have rented it, that's what they do. That's certainly what my client was going to do. You charge people a ticket price to get in. If they've got a ticket, they get in to the area. And during the event, then, the event producer has exclusive use and control of it, to the exclusion of the general public, and frankly, to the exclusion of the water district, other than doing what any landlord would do, and that is, if you think that the tenant is using the leased premises in some manner that's inappropriate, the landlord's going to come check on it. If you've got a tenant that a residential tenant, that they've got three people that are supposed to live there, and you think they've got 15 living there, you can go check on that. If they're supposed to be changing out the air filters on the AC, you can go check on that. They certainly had every right to reserve to themselves the ability to go in and inspect. They reserve that, and understandably, they reserve the right with regard to their water control functions. That does not make it a permit or a license revocable at will, in my opinion. And if you look at then the Exhibit B there that was to the permit, it gives you a better view of what the venue looks like when it is set up and what the intention of the parties was when the permit was entered into. Let me just pause and say this while I'm thinking about it before I get pressed on time at the end. We don't want to waste the court's time. Due course of law, we understand that that is not part of this case, and we're not here to tell the court otherwise. Damages, however, we take a significant issue with opposing counsel's comments with regard to damages. We understand what the measure of damages is in a condemnation case, or as it were, an inverse condemnation case. It's the fair market value of the property taken, right? We're not seeking damages that are outside what the proper legal measure of damages is. That's different, though, than what do you look at to determine what the value of property is. And in this case, it could well be that a trial court could, upon hearing this case, if that should be the result, that looks at and decides that some of the things that Mrs. Granger testified to in her deposition go into valuing the property. While I'm on that point, let me just touch on opposing counsel referenced the Article 6. Article 6 is entitled Assignment and Sublease Prohibited, as it were. The reply brief characterizes that as aspirational semantic nonsense. We seriously disagree with that. These folks wrote it. If they didn't think that this was a lease, why do they say that a sublease is prohibited? And why does it say event producer may not sublet? I think they chose their words purposely, recognizing that it is, in fact, a lease. Note, however, the point here being fair market value of the property taken, the leasehold interest taken. There was no ability to do anything with this without the prior written consent of the district. And again, any well-drafted lease, whether it's a commercial lease, whether it's a single-family residence lease, every lease that I've ever seen that was well-drafted always has in it the restriction that the tenant can't assign the lease without the written consent, prior written consent of the landlord. So that language, as far as our position in the case, does not in any manner make this document entitled permit not a short-term rental, a short-term lease. We think, in fact, that's 100% consistent with it. To that point, let me make some more comments about the permit while I'm here that pertain to that same thing. You'll notice in under Article 1, Purpose and Term of Permit, it talks about granting the event producer at producer's sole cost, risk, and expense. In other words, the Water District recognizes that these folks that are going to spend $5,000 plus a $1,000 deposit are going to spend money getting ready to put on an event. And then I've already gone and walked the court through that last sentence there about the premises being a defined term, and the demonstrative that I've given the court shows and makes the points in that regard. You'll notice under cancellation policy, if notice of cancellation is less than 59 days or less prior to the event date, the Water District keeps the permit fee, right? But the event producer could get the deposit back. Article 4, use of permit. I've already talked about D, right of entry and inspection. I'm not going to continue to go through that other than to note that nothing about a landlord having some right of entry and inspection is inconsistent with the landlord otherwise dispossessing itself of the right to use the premises. Insurance. You'll see the language in there. I'm not going to spend a bunch of time under Article 5B, required insurance. They obviously contemplate that these are going to be significant events and they require significant insurance, understandably. Article 4, assignment and sublease prohibited. We've already talked about that. Critical lease language in our position, Article 7, default and termination, under A, default, the last sentence. Notwithstanding the foregoing, event producer shall be given notice and a reasonable opportunity to cure any default or breach before being subject to termination of this agreement. If it's a license revocable at will, you don't have that language in it, folks. You just don't. And then I want to wrap up with additional
terms, Article 10, additional terms, representations and warranties. You look at what they warranted. They have the full right and legal authority to enter into it. The execution, delivery, and performance does not, will not violate, cause any breach, et cetera, et cetera. I bring this up only because I want to briefly respond to what has been put out there as ostensibly the rationale here, and that is that this was a improper gift of public funds and thus the reason for termination. And what I would tell the court is it's not in any fashion an improper gift of public funds. They didn't sell or give away the event. They gave somebody the right to put it on, but that person had to spend all the money to do that. I think what I've said earlier about Mr. Hill and his animosity towards the Grangers is the real reason here.
Okay, counsel, I need to ask a couple of questions. One, is there any significance that we should find with regard to the slipping in of the term event vendor in Article 4B and in Article 10B, as opposed to that, that's an, appears to be an undefined term in the permit?
I'm sorry, what?
Event vendor. And the reason I'm asking that question is that you would agree that there's nothing in here about a less, there's no use of the term lessor or lessee anywhere in here. The only thing that even term that actually refers to a lease is the sublease and sublet that you pointed out.
Correct.
Is that correct?
We agree with that.
Okay. So what I'm seeing in here, and counsel, you'll be given additional time because I'm going to go over here a little bit, and that is I'm seeing the use of the word non-exclusive right of use is used in Article 1, but it qualifies right of use, but it also non-exclusive is used to qualify right to set up and to take down the event during a larger period of time, okay? And so why is this not simply a situation where this is a vendor contract, not a lessor lessee, landlord lessee tenant situation in terms of a lease, where a vendor has been given the opportunity to use the property in conjunction with the district itself? Because my reading of Article 2, Subsection A, the permit fee, appears that the district is going to be managing parking and profiting from parking. It sets the rate of each person parking, and it specifically says that the event producer has an option to pre-purchase VIP parking, so there's no control over the actual parking with regard to, and by looking at Exhibit A, most of the property involved is parking. So the overflow parking and the event parking, all of that's controlled by the district during the event. So how is this, explain to me under those circumstances, how this is actually a lease as opposed to a license with regard to a vendor using the property?
Because, Your Honor, it's not a vendor that is selling something. They are putting on an event that requires the use of the property to the exclusion of anybody else using all of that property for the same thing. This is not analogous to a situation where you might have at a convention center where they're having booths and people literally are selling things out of those booths, and it's a vendor in that setting. And clearly nobody's going to ever make the argument that that vendor in that context has any short-term rental rights with regard to that space. Instead, we're talking about a significant amount of space here, a significant event that requires extensive time to put everything up, take everything down. And again, this document merely recognizes that fact, but makes it subject to the Water District's ability, if necessary, to come in and trump that right of possession and use in the event of a water control or flooding event.
Okay. I would also note that subsection D of Article 10 points out that four all access badges have to be given to the district for use for on-site support staff. It's not specific to parking or the management of the parking. So anything additionally?
just very, very briefly, Your Honor, let me just point out that the standard of review in this context, as I understand it under the applicable case law, is when a trial court has not issued fact findings with regard to a plea of the jurisdiction, all findings that are substantiated by the evidence in the record are taken as necessary to support the judgment, and the court should take as true all evidence that's favorable to, as it were, in this case, the plaintiffs, the appellees, indulge every reasonable inference and resolve any doubts in favor of the plaintiff. And with that, thank you.
Counsel, you will give counsel 2 minutes. You don't get the full 9 that you left earlier, but we'll add 2 to your 5, okay?
I won't need 7.
All righty.
I believe the standard of review that was cited was the summary judgment standard. This case was decided in the trial court on the pleadings. There wasn't any evidence other than a permit itself in front of the trial court. So the trial court looked at the permit and came to the conclusion that there was an issue as to whether this was a lease or not. So that's really the only evidence you have in front of you, and your review is de novo to the trial court's review. Let me address a few things. There was a discussion about the motivation behind the termination of this permit. I think you probably would agree with me that it's irrelevant what the motivation for the termination of this permit was. That was vetted exclusively in the extensively in the trial court. There were disputes about that, and if you read the news locally, you probably read about it. But what the
why is that? Why is that so? When the cancellation ability of the district was qualified with regard to it could cancel at any times with regard to district functions, as opposed to personality conflicts. Personality conflict wouldn't necessarily come within the cancellation authority, would it?
All I know is that.
Well, no, I mean, you're making the argument it doesn't matter, yeah. But there's the consolation language in the permit is qualified that it has to be with regard to the function of the district and may not merely be a matter of convenience or I forgot the other thing.
I agree with that, but I understand that the issue in front of you is not whether that clause was met. The issue in front of you is whether this document as a whole constitutes a lease or not. And when I hear terms such as irrevocable license, this is not an irrevocable license. The reality is licenses don't have to be irrevocable. The fact that they're not irrevocable doesn't turn them into a lease. For example, if you hunt in Texas and you've ever hunted on somebody's property and they gave you a hunting lease, they call it, it's a license. There are conditions on that. It may say that you can hunt in a particular area of the property. You can hunt for 2 years. You can hunt for 2 months. And there are limitations on the ability to terminate it. That doesn't make it not a license. Okay? So the fact that this document, whether it's terminable at will or irrevocable, is not really the test. The test is whether we intended to give this property them, give it up ourselves, and give it to them for their exclusive possession. We didn't. If you read the permit, you see that. Again, if this were a lease, it would completely upset how every governmental entity in this state operates. For example, the city of Fort Worth gives the permit to the stock show to run a parade up and down the streets every year. If the city terminates that permit, does that mean that the stock show has a takings claim or a due process claim against the city? No. No. It might have a contract claim. It might have some other remedy, but it's not going to have a takings claim or a due process claim. What's in front of you is not a constitutional issue. What's in front of you is a common law issue. The trial court has ruled on those issues, okay? This is the last gaps they had. I appreciate the inventiveness of the argument, but the bottom line, what's in front of you is not a lease, okay? I have nothing further.
All righty. We appreciate the argument. It's been very helpful. And the case, as far as this court is concerned, has been submitted, and you are excused. Thank you.